Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
Joan was quizzical, studied metaphysical science in the home. Late nights all alone with a test tube. Oh, oh, oh. Maxwell Edison, majoring in medicine, calls her on the phone. Can I take you out to the pictures, Joan? But as she's getting ready to go, a knock comes on the door. Bang, bang, Maxwell Silver Hammer came down upon her head.
That is, of course, the Beatles off their 1970 album, Abbey Road. It is Maxwell Silverhammer, which is actually has something to do with the show on tonight. It's a Thursday evening. It is LA Talk Radio. You are listening to The Writer's Block, and I am your host, Jim Christina, without Russ Avison tonight. I have three empty chairs in this studio with me, and I'm not lost. Our guest, we've already spoken, and we figured we've got this. So we do. So anyway, it's a beautiful, beautiful, rainy Thursday night here in Los Angeles. In fact, it's so cloudy, you can barely see the street down below, and Notre Dame High School is right across the street. And, golly, it's just like, wow, it's unusual for Southern California, but here we are. Okay, we're going to kind of abbreviate the opening this week, and I'm just going to give you a few shout-outs for some of the sponsors that we have. And the first one, of course, is Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books. And if you're like most writers, you've finished your manuscript, you sit back from your typewriter, you've typed all your commas, you've hit your last period, you've typed the end, now what do you do? Well, Tuscany Bay and Black Dog Publishing can help you with that. We can get you started on formulating and formatting your text, getting you edited, getting you proofread, getting you published, getting you copies of books that you can put on shelves. You can sell them through the internet. You can take them to book shows, book clubs, book signings, and put a couple bucks in your pocket. You can even give it away to relatives if that's what you want to do. So if that's what you're interested in, give us a call at 805-795-3165, and or you can write me directly at jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com or rpalinelli@tuscanybaybooks.com. And I'm pretty sure you won't be disappointed. At least, I wouldn't be. I would love to have you. And if you're an editor and you're looking for a little extra work, you can give us a call too, because we're always looking for editors that are willing to jump in and do a book or two for somebody. So that number is the same if you're willing to do that, 805-795-3165. The Out West Shop is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyles. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor, and general merchandise. National brands include Rockmount Ranchwear, Scully Leather Company, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. You can shop online at www.outwestshop.com. You can shop online at www.scvoutwest.com, or you can call them direct at 877-340-9378. Enter your code WB100 and you get $10 off your order. That's a good deal. That really is. And these people are tremendous. They're a lot of fun, and we really like them a lot. Actually, one of the owners is, of course, my co-host, Bobby Jean Bell, who is off tonight because this is the fourth Thursday of the month. So get a hold of them. That's Jim and Bobby Jean Bell, the number I just gave you, and they'll be able to help you out with some really cool stuff. And since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM truckload, and an LTL service that is the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they work hard to make your full truckload shipping or LTL experience unparalleled using their customized traffic movement program. So call TFM Truckload or Target Freight Management LTL today at truckload number 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski for truckload or for any of the fine account managers at 888-653-1323 for LTL. Tell them you heard it on the Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. Or if you prefer, you can always go to www.targetfmi.com, which is their web address. They're really nice folks. If you need trucking for anything, man, give them a call, because they're the ones you want to deal with. Okay. Well, we have a treat tonight for Canadians and for, of course, people who like young adults and murderous inclinations and adult horror and psychological thrillers and urban fantasy novels, which is our guest tonight. And her name is Kelly Charon, and she is the author of Young Adult Horror, psychological thrillers, and urban fantasy, all with gritty, murderous inclinations and some moderate amounts of humor. She spends far too much time consuming true crime television. She and I should get along just fine, because I do too. And chocolate. Well, that's okay. That's another point in her favor. While trying to decide if, yes, it was the husband with the wrench in the library, or it was Miss Scarlet in the parlor with the noose. She lives with her husband and cat, Moo Moo, in Vancouver, British Columbia. Would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Kelly Charon.
Give my cat Moo Moo a shout out. She'll love that.
Oh, I can hear every word you're saying. Hello, Kelly.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, thank you so much.
No, you're way.
I love that you mentioned the cat.
Well, of course. Well, you know, we ask you to give us a brief bio, and that's what we use. So if you're lying, then all your friends will know, and that's okay. So,
I
mean,
she's here judging me.
Well, I too spend way too much time watching true crime television, and I used to eat a lot more chocolate than I do now, but I used to eat quite a bit of chocolate. So, and yes, I always thought it was Miss Scarlet in the parlor with the noose.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Oh, it's always been Miss Scarlet.
It usually winds up being her or the butler, huh?
She just looks sneaky and wrong. It just
she just looks guilty. She just looks like she did something wrong. Yeah. So you've got two books that came out, what, in 2017?
Yeah,
last year and one the year before,
yeah.
Right. Pretty Wicked and then Wicked Fallout. And Pretty Wicked is the story of a young lady, Ryan Wilkerson, who is a serial killer, I guess is what you'd call her, or a wannabe, wants to be one of the great ones. And she almost made it.
Almost.
I know, huh?
We can
look
at that and we can say, is it too late?
Why don't you give our audience a little bit of a synopsis on the first one, and then on the second one, Pretty Wicked, and then Wicked. I don't know. I just lost.
Wicked
anyway,
Fallout, yeah.
So kind of give our listeners an idea of what they're about.
Mm-hmm. So I do love me some murder. I don't know why. And so I was inclined to write this. And I thought, who better to be my villain or my protagonist, if that's the way you want to look at it, because I do. She is my protagonist. Her name is Ryan, like you said. She's 15 years old, and she's in a small Colorado town. Her dad is a local police detective, and she has learned as much as she thinks that she can possibly learn from being, you know, his sweet daughter and going to work to visit him and, you know, looking in his library and looking at all the books that he has on crime. And she also gets a good time to try her hands, and she's always felt that she's been different. She's always had dark inclinations, like we talked about, and that, you know, she knows she's different. She wants to make her mark in the world, and she finds serial killers to be fascinating. She shares that same urge to kind of do bad things, and so she, yeah, at 15, decides, like, this is her moment. She wants to try to be what she calls a great, which is the serial killers before her.
Right.
That's book one.
Right.
She does quite a few not nice things. There is some humor in it. It's not completely dark.
Yeah, no, it's not completely dark.
Yeah. And the second book is actually 12 years later, and it takes place partly in prison. Not really a huge spoiler there, but we can, you know, say that. So she's in prison. The second one has been in jail for 12 years. New evidence comes to light that she may or may not be as responsible as everyone believed her to be for the things that she did when she was a child. Her new defense team, I kind of picture them as sensational as when we had the OJ trial.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the Ron, you know, Shapiro, I believe his name was, and
Bob Kardashian, Shapiro,
whatever they,
yeah.
Yeah.
And Johnny Cochran.
Flashy, you know, yeah, Johnny Cochran, media savvy kind of, you know, celebrities in their own right kind of legal team comes in and thinks that they can help her. And she is made to, if she wants to play along with this, if she wants to try to get a chance to get out, she has to see a forensic psychiatrist, Dr. Nancy Clayson, who has some own issues that she brings into this. But she is not really wanting to do this, but basically is being told she has to do this kind of, have this client and interview the serial killer in this prison. And it's a fun ride, I think.
It actually is. I mean, I didn't, that's when I told you I didn't get all the way through. But I did make it through enough. And then, of course, I cheated and had to read the last chapter, so.
Yeah,
but
can't spoil that.
I did read all of your first book, which was, oh my gosh, it was amazing to watch her. It was amazing to watch Ryan build from trying it out to, I mean, just everybody that she meets that just pisses her off. Well, okay, he's the next one, and I mean, whoa.
She does embrace it. Yeah, she chooses what she thinks is wisely, but. Yes, it does get out of hand a bit.
I'm thinking to myself the whole time I'm reading this book, I said, wow, this chick must have watched a lot of Dateline when she was younger. You know,
so much Dateline.
And 48 hours.
And
2020. Yes. And Discovery ID, or
oh
Investigative
God,
Discovery.
God.
Oh, I know. It's horrible. But this young lady,
like, no more murder. Turn it off. Too much.
Oh, I know. My wife just, she goes, I can't. She goes and watches MSNBC instead. So
yeah,
that makes me crazy. So anyway, if you want to call and talk to Kelly tonight, the number in this studio will ring right to me is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. And we are extremely lucky to have Kelly with us this evening. She's quite the young lady. And where did this idea from first of all, the character come from, and secondly, the stories? I know you write the young adult fiction, and you write the urban horror and the urban stories and stuff, but where did this particular story come from? Because this is, I mean, yes, it is interspersed with some humor and a whole lot of teenage angst.
Yes.
But there is some darkness in it.
Oh, yes, there is. As a kid, I was fascinated, like, with true crime, with serial killers, with murder. I don't know why. My parents are distraught. My mother, every time I talk about it, is like, I don't know what we did. Like, were you happy? So, I'm like, I think that's the reason. I've said this before, but I had such a good life and happy upbringing so far that I think that I can safely delve into what's really dark, because my life is very vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very kind of boring almost. So I'm like, And, you know, I did think about, I went to school and became a social worker, honestly, because it was a little bit faster and easier than being a psychiatrist or a psychologist.
Uh-huh.
So I've always been fascinated with human motivation and behavior and what makes people do what they do. Especially looking at family dynamics and what one sibling is completely different than another, twin studies, all these things. So I'm just, you know, wanted to explore something from the villain's point of view that wasn't the typical, I'm a misunderstood villain, I'm really not that bad. Like, think of the book Wicked, where it's like the Wicked Witch in, you know, The Wizard of Oz was really not that bad and was just, you know, people didn't understand her. I'm like, no, this villain is bad. She's not a nice person. And what would it be like to be in her head? And to tell the story from that perspective. So I was fascinated with that concept. And then I thought, if I'm going to have a serial killer, which, I mean, they're the craziest of the crazy, in my opinion. So, like, let's look into that. Who would be the most, like, the person you would assume the least? Seeing that majority of killers, serial killers, are often, in North America anyway, they are middle-aged white males. I thought, you know, having a teenage girl might be really fun. And I was a teenage girl once. Some teenage girls are very crazy and not so nice and murderous. You could see it in their eyes. So I'm like, this might not be too far of a stretch. So I was like, let's do this. I'm going to go with her. It didn't take any work. I just was like, I just knew who she was right away.
Well, having gone through high school and college, I could pretty much tell you that a lot of teenage girls are not very nice, and they're, you know, some of them can be downright murderous, I guess. I don't know. I've never met one, but I'm sure there were some.
Yeah.
But I mean, you were like you said, you grew up white bread and you know, goody two shoes, and so and this girl Ryan keeps telling everybody about how good of a girl she is. You know, I'm a good girl. I can't do this. How can you even think that I did this? I'm a good girl. I'm a good girl. So, like all serial killers and like all psychopaths, she hides it very well, and she assimilates into society better than most.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of cases.
That's one thing in my research they all have in common is they are very charming, charismatic.
Yes.
You don't pick them out. When, you know, Ted Bundy and Jeffrey Dahmer were discovered, everyone was like, not them. Like, they're so lovely. Like, they're the nicest guys. Like, they'd help you no matter what. They're brilliant. Like, you know, you don't hear. Not usually, you know, the creepy guy down in the hallway that you're like, wow, you better, you know, watch out for him. It's the one that we don't assume. Because they've crafted, like, the wolf in sheep's clothing, right? They've crafted their identity. They know. They're so smart. They know exactly how to get away with it. You know what I mean? What's the fun of the hunt if they're going to give themselves away?
Right, right.
So I really wanted to do that with her.
Well, they...
cheerleader who no one would suspect, right?
Yeah, and they smile at you, and they talk to you, and they go to parties, and the whole time they're hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Which you made very apparent in your book.
Yeah. I think I read a stat that said in the U.S. there are 50,000 serial killers at any given point.
I never knew that statistic. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. I've heard the statistic 10 times over the last few years in different places. So I want to believe that it's not true.
Okay.
I feel like it might be.
Here's a game for you. Say statistic 10 times really fast. No way.
You really want me to?
No, you'd be tripping over your tongue. But you probably could because you do have a cat named Moo Moo. Okay.
I do have a cat named Moo.
You sat down one night or one day or whenever. You write mostly at night. Is that the deal with you?
Often nights and weekends, yeah, because I usually, like, I have a day job, so it's not really conducive to being in elementary school and be like, hold on, I'm just going to kill this person, and then we'll help you with your math. It doesn't really work that way.
Yeah, it probably isn't too good to drag that into first grade, is it? Yeah, I mean, in fact, we talked the other night, and we were talking about, you know, don't plan on becoming rich off your writing, you know.
I wish. I know.
We all do. I mean, I'm up to
those
like...
top 5%, we could just be the Stephen Kings of the world. And
I know. I would love to, but I'm up to 13, 14 books, and I mean, you know, I don't make a living off of it. I make some money, but, you know, and it's decent, but it's not enough to live on.
I hear you. Yeah.
So
subsidizing the income, doing something you love, is not bad.
No, it's great. You know, but it's all shameless self-promotion. If you're not willing to go out there and sell your goods, you know, you're not.
That's been very hard for me.
Is it really?
I made up for the first chunk of going, oh yeah, I published a book. You probably don't want to read it though. It's okay.
Well, I happen to know that your publicist is not going to allow you to do that.
Yes. I'm not a savvy salesperson for a long time. I was like, I've gotten better with that. I think when you're, you know, raised in a nice Canadian town, you just are taught that you don't, promoting is like bragging and that's bad and you don't do that. So
yeah.
I had to learn to be like, it's okay.
No. But if you don't promote, nobody knows. And if nobody knows, nobody's going to purchase your book.
That's true.
So now you're sitting here on a radio show that we've got probably, well, and I for a fact, we have over 500,000 listeners. So you're going to have that many people listening to your story, at least.
Hello.
Hello. I am Kelly. See me. Yeah. See me roar, kind of.
Yeah. If you like killing.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes.
For you. Yeah.
So you sat down at night and weekends, and you started pounding out this story, and how many times did you start and stop?
I didn't. I wrote straight through and did it in 6 weeks. This one came very easy.
Really?
It was the third book that I had written,
mm-hmm.
And it was quick. It was like I basically knew. I didn't know the details. I didn't outline at that point in my writing career, but it was, I know how it ends. I know how it starts. I know there's these five deaths for sure. And now I've got to connect the dots and write the thing. So, yeah, it was about 6 weeks from start to finish, which was really fast, considering the first book that I wrote was about 7 years in between.
Oh, wow.
Stopping. It was like a lot of stopping to go to school. I finished 2 degrees in that time, so it really wasn't the best to be trying to write. So then, yeah, this one, I think that's actually my second book that I wrote. Yeah, the second one. And it was great. I loved it. I think it just, she came through very clear. I don't know if that says about me, but she came through very clear. And it was very much one of those I hear writers talk about. They're just kind of the device. Like, they hear the character talking and they just write it down. And that was very easy for me. She just came through very clear. So, yeah, it was a pretty easy process. The book I'm writing now has not been completely opposite. So I appreciated Pretty Wicked for what it was. It was good.
Well, and Wicked Fallout, was it the same?
No, Wicked Fallout was a little bit more messy. Uh-huh. That one came about because I had some agent and publisher interest. I'd went to a conference and they'd wanted to see the adult version of Pretty Wicked. And I said, I don't have one, but maybe I can write one. So I still loved my idea. I loved my book. I didn't really see her as an adult. I'm like, oh, I don't know about this. So I started to write it. I got probably about halfway and thought, this just isn't right. I don't like it. It's not right. And she needs to... I don't want to say goodbye to the first version. I really like it. I like who she is when she's 15. I like how snarky she is, the self-discovery of her doing these things. I don't want her to be an adult.
Mm-hmm.
So I changed it to a sequel and made it 12 years later, and I liked both. I wanted to see what she was doing now, like this much time had passed and where she was going to go. So that's kind of, it came out as an accident, and I never mailed those agents or editors back, which I'm sure they're fine with. They probably forgot all about it, but I was like, I'm just not gonna do it. I'm gonna stick to what I want to do, and we'll see. So it was kind of an accident, but I was happy. I feel like it was really fun to tell both sides. Very different, I feel like, in tone, because they're doing different things, right? She's a different person in
yes
both.
Yeah you're night and day in Pretty Wicked, and then your second book on with Ryan, Wicked Fallout. They're two different stories totally, and one is most certainly, Wicked Fallout is most certainly an adult story.
Yeah,
there. I mean,
and
there's
definitely, like, you have flashbacks, because I definitely wrote it in mind. I know that a huge portion of people who read young adult are not going to read an adult version.
Mm-hmm.
They like YA.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote this, and I mean, I've had some people on Goodreads and stuff say, I love this book except for the recap. And I'm like, the recap had to be there, I feel like, because I wanted to try to get a whole new audience that wasn't going to read the first book. And I did get quite a few who were like, I don't feel like I missed anything from the first book. I don't like young adults. I feel like I got everything I needed in this.
Mm-hmm.
So it did what it needed to do for me for that, I think. And the remainder of the series, if and when I ever get to writing it, will be adult. So obviously. So there won't be any more prequels or anything like that. It's going to be, you know, from that point forward. So
you're pretty much done with Ryan now.
No, I have some ideas.
Well, you left it really totally open at the end of the second book, I have to say.
I wanted to leave it open. So I'm happy if it stays a duology. I'm okay with that. I've had some people asking for a third one, which was surprising and really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I do have ideas. I could definitely do a few more with her. But right now she's on hold. I've got another adult thriller in the works and the young adult urban fantasy that I'm finishing up right now. So I'm all over the place.
the YA moniker you slapped on Pretty Wicked, really, I mean, it works okay as a young adult, but it actually reads as an adult novel as well. So you've actually managed to cross that boundary and make it acceptable to both adult and young adult, probably with the same verve as one with the other. So I found it an interesting read, and I did not read it from a young adult perspective. So I enjoyed
the young adult. The young adult comes in because of her age and the fact that she's in high school and she's dealing with social issues that are high school-ish.
Sure.
I hoped that it would be a crossover. I kind of gave it the moniker of mature young adult.
Uh-huh.
Because I feel like it is quite dark. Not that kids don't watch and read and play video games, the dark stuff, because I did struggle with putting it out and being like, ooh, should I, you know, get responsible?
Right.
And like, kids are smart. They know it's a story. They, you know, read Stephen King. I started reading Stephen King when I was like 14, so I'm sure they will figure out that it's a story. It's not real. Don't do this.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Well, you know, you sold me at the belly shots at the party.
There you go. It's an accurate thing that happened.
Oh, I'm sure.
Not me.
I'm sure.
Not me. I would not.
Not in the days when I went to high school, but, I mean, we knew what tequila was, but, you know, we didn't mess with it.
Yeah.
No, mm-hmm. You know, bourbon, yes. No.
There you go, bourbon. A little whiskey.
A little bourbon. It. Incidentally, the mug you're getting holds more than just coffee. So keep that in mind.
It will.
Keep that in mind.
And it will. Or maybe blending. I do like a Bailey's coffee. There you go.
You know, I've got a bottle of Bailey's down in my little liquor thingy. That's actually, that belongs to Jerry, but.
Why am I not there in person?
I don't know. You know, maybe they won't let you across the border. Who knows?
Done anything yet? I should be fine.
So
while you write it, you get it all out that way.
I know, huh?
Oh,
so
actually, my friend sat there the other maybe about a year ago, and she's like, I know why you wrote this, and I was like, what do you mean? She's only known me the last like 5 or 6 years, but she's like, I know you were bullied. You told me you were bullied growing up, and this is you getting revenge. I'm like, oh wow. I wouldn't think that I would go kill them all, but not at all. That's so funny.
Well,
I just like Silence of the Lambs and watching a lot of
Well, I nice twist in Pretty Wicked was the fact that a great twist was that she was a detective's daughter, and I like that. But I also found it interesting that he really didn't pay much attention to what she was doing when she threw clue after clue after clue at him, and he still didn't pick it up.
Yes.
I don't know if that's a normal father, especially a cop. Jeez, I don't know, but it was a nice touch.
But when you have a personality like,
well, that's true. That's
family.
True.
When
yeah.
you have a personality who thinks they think some of them, not all of them, but some of them think that they are so smart and they know so much, and they, you know, ignore what's right in front of them because they're too busy looking at the things around.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like that particular character, like the dad. Very self-absorbed, very nothing's ever good enough. I kind of want us to be as perfect as possible, and let's keep up whatever. So he didn't want to see any imperfections in his kids anyway. So he wasn't, you know, until it was too late, until it was, you know, until it's thrust in front of you, I don't think you're willing. There's a certain level of denial that I think is really comfortable for a lot of people. So.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't experience that, and you obviously didn't experience that, but I'm sure a lot of kids did.
Yep.
So, I'm gonna take a brief little time out here and do a commercial for All Dogs Rule. I'll be back to you in about 30 seconds. So hang tough, don't go away, and I'll be back. Imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. Sound like a perfect vacation spot? It is. For your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you are going away for one or two nights or extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dog returns home, you'll have to ask, whose vacation was better, mine or the dog's? Well, the answer is going to be painfully clear. It was the dog. So check out their website, alldogsrule.com. Give them a call, 805-524-1100. Your dog will thank you, and Russ and Karen will thank you. And Russ is supposed to be here with me tonight, incidentally, but he begged off. He was sick, and I feel bad for him because he's never sick. He can't walk half the time, but he's never sick. So, you are listening to LA Talk Radio. It is now 7:28 on a Thursday evening. We are talking with Kelly Charon, the author and chief bottle washer of Wicked Fallout, and her other book, which is Pretty Wicked, about a young lady who is a serial killer at 15 and moves on up into life. And, Kelly, you are still with us, I assume.
I am here.
Okay. So you've kind of gone through how you got these people, how you got these characters. Now let's talk about your process.
Okay.
When you said already once that you don't write, or you didn't write with an outline. Do you now?
Yeah, I have definitely tried my hand at that. Although I've been frustrated the last 3 days because I just totally went off of it.
Uh-huh.
I had it all nicely planned. Everything was working great, and I stuck to the outline for about 25 chapters, and then I just veered off completely. It was like, I don't know what just happened here,
mm-hmm.
but I'm mm-hmm. going with it because I think it's okay. So I'm learning. This is the first book I've ever outlined, the one I'm writing right now. So it's the fifth book. And so, yeah, I think that it saves time in the end. I'm learning to accept it and embrace it because it does save some time. I've had to rewrite some books because it didn't quite hit all the marks that I had wanted because I didn't know where I was going and wasted a lot of time and space trying to figure it out on the fly. So, yeah, I'm definitely becoming a fan of it. It does make it... I think it does make it a little bit less exciting for me to write with an outline just because I do know what's going to happen and it's just making that happen on the page.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you still get surprised because I didn't know like a few days ago that this was going to happen and it's much better. So I'll mm-hmm. just do a combination.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to just write with a concept and just totally exploratory write, just see what happens.
Uh-huh.
And then at the end, I would reverse outline. So I would then, when I finished the draft, write out every chapter of what the main things happened and then kind of look at it and make sure I did everything I needed to do.
Mm.
And it always worked. I think we all, because we are immersed in story constantly with reading, with movies, with television, we naturally know certain beats and when certain things should happen. So
mm-hmm.
I feel like that was fairly consistent with me, but yeah, there were times where I definitely veered off and mm-hmm. did extra scenes when I was like, this doesn't need to be here. So it's been fun.
Mm-hmm. Now, as a writer, do you find that there's a certain rhythm to the story as you're writing it? And you know immediately when you're off that rhythm?
Yes. And I think that's where people feel that they get writer's block.
Well, that's the next question.
Yeah. I don't think that the writer's block is the real thing, but I think it is definitely you're off what your book should be. You're off the plot.
Mm-hmm.
You've done something wrong. So I feel like and that's the reason you're stuck is because, you know, you don't know where to go from there because it's not the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I have such a great community of writers out here that I use all the time. And my husband's actually really jumped on board lately, which is hilarious because he's more invested, I think, in my current story than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no, I don't like that. And you need to do this. And I'm like, I'm going to have to put your name on the cover because you're so involved.
Right, right, right.
Talking things out for me is huge.
So when you find yourself,
all the notes I want.
Yeah.
What?
When you find yourself off track or off your storyline, or in a writer's block, as it were, how do you remedy that? How do you get out of it?
So a lot of people, writers, hate to read or watch something in the genre that they're doing because they don't want to be influenced.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the opposite. I need that inspiration. So if I'm stuck with something murdery and I'm like, what? I'm like, okay, I'm going to research some true crime right now. I'm going to watch a documentary. I'm going to watch a movie that's a thriller
mm-hmm.
and see if it inspires me or pops an idea that I can twist in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that I normally do. And I also will talk to my friends and say, here's what I've got. Where am I going wrong? This is what I did. It doesn't feel right. What if I did, you know, brainstorm a bunch of things that I could do? And I'll know. Mm-hmm. I get this feeling. And I'm like, that's it. That's the one. And I'm like, okay. So, yeah. And it takes a while sometimes. Sometimes it's weeks. I'm like, crap.
Well, you know, we as writers sometimes get ahead of ourselves and we think we're going someplace and we get two chapters down the road and find out, oh, crap, that was a wrong turn.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you how many times I've done that.
Is it easier for you the longer that you write and the more books you have out to scrap scenes, like the whole Kill Your Darlings? Because that was really hard for my first two books. I was like, I don't want to cut this, though, but I like it.
It doesn't serve spot. You know, yeah, you have to make concessions with everything you write, and sometimes good characters have to go bye-bye, and sometimes great scenes have to go bye-bye. Because they may not have any, they may not pertain to the story. It's just a great scene. Like a lot of movies you see have these wonderful scenes, but they really don't pertain to the movie. And you ask yourself when the movie's over, why did they leave that in there? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, books are the same way. And I think we all, myself included, get caught up in this, you know, God, what a great scene. I don't want to lose that. Well, move it to something else that you're writing and, you know.
Yeah.
But, I go for authenticity, and that's and in your book, and I have to say, the book that I read, the Pretty Wicked. It's authentic as hell. I can see these kids. You can smell the sweat in their gym clothes. Did an absolutely phenomenal job with that. And you can almost see the little...
At the time I was writing it, I worked with teenagers, so that was helpful.
Oh, well, okay, there you go. But, I mean, you can almost see the smirk on Ryan's face as she's doing all this. And it's just like, oh, man, you just want to smack her.
You do. Oh,
I know.
Thank you. It's a good compliment that you actually want to smack her. I really appreciate that.
Well, actually, at the end of the second book, you really want to smack her. But, you know...
My friend's like, I'm really sorry, I just hate her. Oh. Like, I was going to be offended. And I'm like, thank you. Like, no, like, she, like, evoked an emotion that you hate her. Great. Like, that's awesome.
Well, I try to best myself on villains. I really do. I mean, I've written some world-class villains. And I always try to outdo my villains on every book. And so I've got some really good ones. Believe me, I've got ones that they've done everything, and in fact, villains, they'll show up in other stories. And in fact, Richard Polinelli, who is my partner here in the radio station, also he's my partner in our company, Black Dog Publishing. We just wrote one together. That was going to be my next question to you, but I wrote some characters, or I wrote some bad guys, and I put a bad guy in there that I had in a previous book. And it happens to be a Comanche Mexican mix named Medrano. And Richard was asking me, well, Medrano, doesn't he show up in one of your other books? I said, yeah, he does.
what I need from you now is to write a book with all your villains fighting each other.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun? Well, they're all dead. I mean, usually they wind up dead. So very few of them get away. Very few of them. But that next question I was going to ask you is dialogue. Do you find dialogue to come to you from each character? They dictate their own dialogue to you, or do you have to really sit down and think about what they're going to say?
Dialogue comes to me extremely easily. Mm-hmm. It is basically like stream of consciousness. Like, it just is there. Mm-hmm. What's very difficult for me is the action and description around it. So more of the exposition, because I see things very clearly in my head, and I have a very big struggle trying to make it look like that on the page. Like, how do I describe that action? Like, what word like would come across? Like, that's very clumsy for me. Mm-hmm. I really struggle. That's like a second and third pass that I'm going in and adding things. And I found, like, after Pretty Wicked, I was like, I never, for the first draft, I didn't describe anybody. And I know that works for some people in a lot of books, but I feel like I don't want to overwhelm, like, my reader with tons of description and detail, but I do need some, and so I have to go back in and layer that in, because it's not my forte. Mm-hmm. Dialogue is probably my easiest thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, dialogue came really easy for me as well. And did you take any creative writing classes?
No, I have an English lit degree, so I just studied and then wrote papers.
Okay. Well,
I tore everything apart and talked about it, but I was too scared to actually do any writing at that point and try to apply for the creative writing program. I was very nervous.
Okay.
To do that, so.
Now, for the benefit of our new writers that are listening, and they do listen, what got you, what started you down the path of becoming a writer?
Just loving story. It was my favorite thing. And I was a big reader, but I always loved movies and television. And mm-hmm. then I thought I wanted to be an actor at one point. I thought, well, this is a great way to tell story. Just kind of not, I think, believing that, A, I was able to, who were authors, like what kind of, you know, who got to do that job? Mm-hmm. So I didn't really think that I would be taken seriously writing a book. I think that was kind of it. Not that acting would have been any easier. It definitely wasn't. Mm-hmm. And then I was toying with the idea and thought, you know, maybe I could do this and nobody has to see it. And I did read tons of Writer's Digest and craft books for, God, maybe over a year and a half before I even tried to write anything. And then I didn't even do, like, probably would have been smart to be like, let's try a short story. But I went right to a novel and wrote one and did, it was really long. It was a young adult and it was 156,000 words of not greatness that was repetitive. And
that's like, you know, the word count of the Bible.
I know, it was pretty long.
Yeah.
And so that was a good learning experience. And then I hired an editor who was a is a young adult author, and she helped me pick it apart and go through it and teach me that, you know, your readers, they're smart and they don't need you to mention this a sixth time. Like,
right.
They've got it.
Right.
So
right.
I got to, you know, I cut down the book, and like now it's, I will, I want to put it out one day. I love it. I think it's still a solid story.
Uh-huh.
And I've edited it a few times in the last, you know, year or two, so that it's, I think, well on its way to being able to go out in the world. But yeah, when I did query it, I was like, I'm going to be that person that writes my first book and queries it. You know, I will say I'm happy that I did get some responses and I got some requests for fulls and things like that. In the end, Urban Fantasy at the time, I think this was 6 years ago, was really even more dead than it is now. They did not, it was after Twilight, and they were like, we don't want anything supernatural. So, you know, it's starting to come back around now, I think.
Oh, supernatural is huge. It's huge right now.
Yeah, but people in young adult, like, it's still in traditional industry, they don't want it. I went to a conference in October, and all these agents were fantasy agents. And I'm like, I know they mean Game of Thrones. I know they mean
Twilight.
They don't want the Twilight. I don't write vampires, but I love them.
Yeah.
So I went up to them and was like, you know, a bunch of them, and like, fantasy, you do fantasy, young adult? And they're like, ooh, they give me that look. It depends what it is. And I'm like, the newest one that I'm finishing is witches. And I'm like, well, witches. And then they're like, oh, yes, witches is the only urban fantasy right now that's still hot and that we'll look at. So I was like, oh, at least I picked a good one now. So,
well, you know, one of Mickey's writers, Katie Salitis, she writes strictly vampire stories, and they're absolutely phenomenal, and they're so fascinating. I'm sorry?
Big difference. She's an adult writer, isn't she?
Yes, she is. Yeah.
Yes, and so there's the difference. It's young adult that's not good. Adult, supernatural, and anything you want is great. Like, people want it, which is awesome, but young adult, I think, is a bit harder sell.
Oh, yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. I mean, I've never tried writing for young adults. I don't think I could. My language is way too coarse.
I do like the adult stuff. I mean, Wicked Fallout was my first adult, and I was very scared. For a long time, I just felt like, I'm like, what do I have to say that adults will like? Like, I can please a teenager. Like, they're awesome. But truthfully, I don't really know many teenagers that I've even bought Wicked Fallout. All my readers seem to be adults, and mostly women, but there are some men. So I was surprised. Like, oh, okay, great.
Well, what are you reading now? What are you reading? What do you like to read?
Actually, I'm reading the Sookie Stackhouse books. I don't know why. I feel like vampires. So the craze for True Blood ended a while ago, and I'm just starting. I never read or watched any of it at the time it was popular. So I'm reading those. Actually cheating and listening to the audiobook because I have a commute. So I've been doing that. And then I'm reading, I just finished. I'm reading a Maureen Johnson book. She's a young adult. So I try to read adult and young adult. I like to keep both going. And I read a lot of thrillers and fantasy. It's pretty much what I like to write is what I like to read. I've gotten away from, not that it doesn't have its place, like literary fiction can be wonderful, but I had to do so much of that for the degree that, and I found that I didn't love it the same way. I like fast-paced action. I like drama, you know what I mean? So the slow meandering, sometimes, you know, very emotional based only literary, I'm like, it has its place and I do appreciate it for what it is, but it's just not what I'm going to probably pick up.
You know,
so
like
much.
War and Peace?
Not so much War and Peace. No, I think that would be like holding a door open, I think, for me.
I'm afraid that and Gone with the Wind, those are two books that I just never want to have on my shelf.
I wouldn't even watch Gone with the Wind movies.
So I won't either. It's one of the worst stories ever written.
I got to when I was about 20 and was like, why? I don't understand why people love this. But they do. Yeah. So funny. So, yeah, and I'm a huge like TV person. I watch far too much.
Well, I mean, I'm surprised that you don't really get into true crime books.
I have read my fair share. One that sticks out was The Woman Under the Bed. Now, if you've not read this,
no.
I don't know if it's still in print. You need to. It's crazy. This couple kidnaps this woman, keeps her in a box under the bed for over a year.
Oh, I've seen it.
Years.
I just haven't. I didn't read it.
It was crazy. Anyway, what a ride. So, and then, of course, I'm from an area in Canada where we had, it was very close to where, I don't know if you know who Paul Bernardo is. So he was a serial killer. and he and his wife.
Oh, yes. And he was married to, and then he and his wife killed her sister?
Yes. This one. So, yes, there are some true crime that I definitely read, but I think, like, I've watched so much of the TV shows that I just don't read it as much as I should.
Oh, well, you know.
I did just read the book, The Spider and the Fly.
Uh-huh.
Which was an interesting take. It's a woman who is a journalist, I think, maybe New York, Chicago, somewhere like that. And she was following the case of the serial killer. He had killed, you know, 7 or 8 women, and he had kept them in his family home. He was in his 20s and still lived at home and kept the bodies in the attic. And the house reeked, and the police came, and he never got caught, and it was just craziness. And so she decided, he got caught eventually, obviously went to jail, but she wanted to write about him and interview him. So they had these crazy, bizarre, twisted relationship over years of writing back and forth and visiting, and it was very abusive and strange, but she was like drawn in to try to get his story. And so when she wrote the book finally after 20 years, it was just crazy to read. I was like, wow. So I do read a bit of it, but
there,
yeah,
you go. Well, I'm gonna have to cut you off. We're running out of time, so if you wouldn't mind giving our listeners where they can contact you, Amazon or mm-hmm. Facebook or website. I know you've got a website, kellycharon.com, CHARRON.
Yes.
And so, you want to give them all the other information?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter, Kelly M. Sharon, there, and website, like you said, kellycharon.com. I'm on Facebook. You can email me. I am on Amazon. I do have a thing there, and on Goodreads. So, yeah.
Good enough.
I love talking to people, so read
the book. Excellent. And her books, Pretty Wicked and Wicked Fallout, are now available on Amazon and all the online bookstores. And yep. If you go and actually walk up and say hello to her at a book signing, you can probably buy them directly from her, and she'll even sign them.
You can. Yep. Thank you so much.
Just remember, Kelly, shameless self-promotion.
Shameless self-promotion. I will learn.
Thanks for spending your evening with us. We loved having you.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. It was so much fun.
No worries. Have a fun time, and that mug is on its way.
I can't wait. I'll send a picture.
Oh, you have to. That's part of the rules.
You'll have to guess what's in it. We won't know.
It'll be alcohol, though.
It might be.
Good girl.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Enjoy your evening.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
And it's Kelly Sharon. She's a Canadian writer, and her books really, truly are good, and you can find them. And if Pretty Wicked and Wicked Fallout are two just great stories, 180 degrees apart. So if you get an opportunity, pick those up and give them a read. Pretty Wicked is a young adult thriller, and then, of course, Wicked Fallout is a pure adult story. Okay, we have next Thursday, we have Peggy Wheeler will be with us in the studio, along with hopefully Richard will be here, and Bobby Jean will be on the phone. And Peggy's, of course, she's got her book Check On, and the Butimus Potamus, I don't know, I can't even pronounce it. So anyway, we'll be talking about those two books. In April, we have John Leonard Pelmier. He's on the 5th. Karen Lee is on the 12th. And we've just gotten confirmation from Mr. John Sanford. He will be joining us on the 19th. So that ought to be a conversation that everybody wants to listen to. And the 26th, of course, is Bruce Solheim, who right now is in the middle of finishing his book up called Timeless, A Personal Paranormal Journey. And we have, of course, April 21st and 22nd, we have the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival. And that it will be at the William S. Hart Park in Newhall. And we have quite a few people who are going to be showing up to the Buckaroo Bookstore. Richard Palinelli and myself will be there. Courtney Joyner, J.R. Sanders, Eric Heisner, Al Bringus, Bob Brill, Dale Jackson, Johnny D. Boggs, Katie Ryan, Peter Shireko, and Michael Blake will all be there that weekend. J.R. and Al Bring. Oh, no, wait a minute. This is J.R. and I don't know. Anyway, one of them is only there for a day. So, Dale Jackson. And then Bobby Jean Bell will be in town for that one. She'll be in the studio with us on the 19th. She'll be at the Cowboy Festival on the 21st. So if you want to talk to Bobby Jean, that is the day you can catch her. She'll be all over that fairground, so make sure that you catch her. We got things coming up that are just going to be fun. And if this is going to be a heads up, first heads up that you all have heard that we will, in May, we are going to be starting a new radio station. It's going to be KWTF. That's What the Radio. And we're just going to be talking about anything and everything, and nothing's going to be verboten. So we'll just, you know, get on board and we'll just chat. So that's starting in May. I don't know what day yet, but it looks like it's going to be about Thursdays at 6. So we'll go for there, drive time. We'll go from that. And with that being said, this is another Thursday. We've just pretty much shot right in the butt. And I'm was glad to have you listening to us. For Russ, who couldn't be here, Bobby Jean, who is home, Richard, who is out doing something for Richard, and for myself, Jim Christina, this is another Thursday gone. And we thank you so much for listening. And we are out of here.